Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Tulsa's Laureate Institute for Brain Research is participating in a landmark study in the brain development of adolescents. Now, over the years, small studies have looked at individual areas of brain development and small population samples for limited amounts of time. But the Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study that Laureate will be participating in will follow the biological and behavioral development of over 10,000 children from ages 9 to 10 all the way through to early adulthood. This 10-year study will provide insights into a variety of teenage experiences and how it affects brain development, from technology usage and video game play to head injuries in sports to the participation in extracurricular activities like in the arts or religious activities or social clubs, the experimentation or use of alcohol and drugs, and a whole host of other areas. And because the study is nationwide, the study will also look at how regional differences and whether geographic location and culture have an impact on brain development. Laureate is recruiting over 600 children in the Tulsa area, ages 8 and 9, to participate in this study. Not only will the children be participating in the study, parents will also have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to learn about how children's minds evolve and develop over the course of those 10 years. My guests today are Dr. Martin Paulus, the Laureate Institute Scientific Director and President, and Florence Breslin, who is the study coordinator for the ABCD, Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study. Dr. Paulus and Florence, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Dr. Paulus, let me start with you. What was the reason for this Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study? I mean, we've been studying children and adolescents for their brain development for a long time. What is special about this particular study?
Yeah, there are probably two aspects of the study that are really innovative and revolutionary in some ways. First of all, although we have quite a bit of knowledge about how the brain develops, particularly during adolescence, there's never been a study that actually followed individuals for an extended period of time to look actually how individual brains develop from age 9, 10, which is the starting age of the study, till early adulthood, age 19, 20. So the fact that we can actually follow an individual over that period of time is unprecedented. So that's the first aspect. The second aspect of it is that most of the study that we have used to build our knowledge base about adolescent brain development are relatively small. And they're done in particular laboratories that have specialized in this type of research. What ABCD is a nationwide effort to get a representative sample that really shows how brains develop in kids of every social background, of every ethnic background. So in that sense, ABCD is a really unique experiment at a scale that we've never seen before.
And I would assume you're also looking at regional differences. It sounds like we have a series of snapshots of brain development, and this is like a motion picture.
That's exactly right. Having areas where, you know, we have big cities, we have New York and San Diego represented, and then we have smaller communities like Tulsa, like parts of Utah, you know, Pittsburgh's a bigger city, but then there's Virginia Commonwealth University, which is a smaller town in Virginia. So there's definitely a capture across the country of the different areas and the different relationships and cultural values that go through that and how that changes and affects these kids in different ways.
Do you think that will have, I mean, where you grow up will have some effect on brain development?
I think that what we will see that there are a number of factors that influence brain development. We already know this for several mental health conditions, that social, cultural, and even religious background can have an influence on brain health and brain disease. So in a sense, I do think we will learn that these background factors will have profound effects. We know for many of the conditions that develop during adolescence, risk-related conditions, whether it's risky behaviors, whether it's exposure to substances or alcohol, but also sports and other more healthy behaviors really are multiply determined. And both culture and ethnic background are really important in that.
You mentioned like frontal cortex development, which is that's the sort of higher reasoning function. It's the function I've always understood it to be that keeps you from, say, hanging out at the railroad tracks when the train's coming by, you know, that sort of risky behavior and sort of a moderating factor. We know that develops in late adolescence and maybe even early adulthood. What will you learn from this study when you're tracking that development over a full 10-year period?
Because we study individual kids over the 10 years, what we can actually see is what are the factors that promote the development of, say, the prefrontal cortex or the prefrontal system, and what are the factors that create a healthy balance between sort of our impulsive part of the brain that wants things now and the part of the brain that can wait till later. And see, in a cross-sectional, meaning in a study where you only have a snapshot, you can see that between kids, but you can never really be sure whether that's the same factor for a particular kid. By studying a kid over this period of time, we can see, say, how did this brain look at age 12? How does it look at age 14? What has changed? And what has that change resulted in behaviorally? How well the kid is doing at school? How many friends the kid has? You know, how he or she is engaged in sports activities, how much time they spend with their computers, their handhelds, or whatever not. So these are all questions that you can really only address appropriately by studying them as what we call a within subjects design, which means that you look at the kid as it develops. Now, when you have then 10,000 kids, which is what ABCD is, you have an unprecedented knowledge base of variety, right? Because among those 10,000 children, there'll be all kinds of behaviors that we can observe and all kinds of differences in the brain characteristics of these kids. So that makes this study and this whole endeavor so powerful.
Sounds like the variables, though, are huge. I mean, you're going to be looking at crunching this data with supercomputers because there are so many variables you're talking about, correct, Florence?
Yeah, there are. And it's a very interesting study because we do collect so much information from the kids. Nicely, we can do some of that with gameplay, but we are looking at the kids' perspective of how they feel, their moods, their behaviors. We ask their parents their perspective of their moods and their behaviors. We ask them how much they like school, if they feel like they're supported at school. If they don't feel like they're supported at school, we actually ask them about their favorite teacher and their least favorite teacher. Because even that demographic of, you know, this teacher really likes me and I love this class and I'm good in it versus the class that I don't like so much, there can be changes. Mm-hmm. And how they respond and how that affects their development, how it affects their anxiety levels or things like that, which we're seeing more in kids this age now. So there's a lot being collected here through these kids so we can really know what the differences are. It's not a study looking at just mental health factors. It's not a study looking at just educational factors or cultural factors, but it really combines all of that. We're looking at the whole child and everything that's affecting them as they grow up and how does that affect their brain development. You know, the good things, how does it help their brain development? Maybe not so positive things, does that hurt their brain development? Or how can we modulate that? How can we help kids improve so that they don't have some of these problems?
You're looking at everything from sociability, you know, how well the child fits in with their peers. I'd assume technology is a big part of this. And how important is technology and the child's use of technology to this study? Because, you know, you're hearing all these stories and some of them are small scientific samples or some of them are just people writing books about how they think children are changing due to technology.
And again, I think that you bring up a really important aspect. Our society is changing so quickly. The use of technology is changing so quickly. We have a special work group in ABCD in the consortium that focus on emerging technologies and also looking at ways of studying this. So, for example, one of the subsets of a subgroup of ABCD sites will use mobile devices and, for example, measure, you know, how the kid and later on the adolescent, you know, how much they sleep, how much time they spend being active and those kinds of things. And we have work groups that are looking at how do we get, you know, how do we best assess this. I wanted to say one more thing about ABCD because I think that's also important for all the listeners to know. ABCD pursues what's called an open data science policy. What that means is that even though we are one of 19 sites that collect the data, and again, it's an unprecedented breadth of data that we are collecting, and we're collecting this over the next 10 years, once the data has been collected, it will be anonymized. And what that means is that the data will be in a database, but they will not be traced back to any particular individual. And then after a certain period of time, and for right now the policy is after about a year, that anonymized data will be made available to all scientists that are interested in studying the data. And so what that will allow us to multiply the effect in terms of knowledge gain, so that it's not just a few scientists that work on this project, but it will be really a large community of researchers that will have eventually access to the data.
So you have researchers who have been working in a particular area for years with small samples. All of a sudden, they're going to have this 10,000 group sample to sort of extrapolate what they've already been learning to what has been collected in this survey.
It allows us to take the expertise of all scientists and use it to get the most information out of this. So it's not just one small group looking at how much can we learn from these kids.
My guests today are Martin Paulus, the Laureate Institute Scientific Director and President, and Florence Breslin, the Study Coordinator for the Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study, ABCD. And Laureate Institute for Brain Research is launching this landmark study along with a number of other institutes, and they'll be recruiting 600 children and parents, and will follow them for up to a decade. So, Florence, in recruiting, I'll give you let you give your recruiting pitch here, if you will. You're looking for what, about 9 to 10-year-old children and parents?
We actively allow kids 9 to 10 to enroll and start in the study. We are taking kids who are 8 at this time into our queue, so we'll do a screening, make sure that there's nothing that would make them ineligible. Of course, the big ineligibility is any kind of metal in the body. We use an MRI to take pictures of the kid's brain safely, but that you can't have metal. So we'll screen them in if they're interested and then kind of wait till their 9th birthday to schedule them and bring them in. The way we recruit kids for this study is through the schools. So we're working in partnerships with all of the local school districts. TPS has been a great partner for us. We produced an outreach program that we're bringing to the schools free of charge to any of the teachers, 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade that are interested in having us come in. It's a STEAM-based, which is the new big initiative, is this science, technology, education, and art. So we bring in an art project. We help them. We make a paper brain cap where they learn the different parts of the brain, and they can make a paper cap that they can wear. We make an art neuron. So we take puffballs and, you know, pipe cleaners, and we make a neuron. But they learn the different parts of a neuron and how the neuron works so that it's an electrochemical signal, and we talk about those different parts. And then we have very hands-on activities for each of the kids to do. We bring in sheep brains so they can touch and feel and see how the brain is. We talk about bike safety helmet, and this brain is squishy and why we need to wear helmets when we play sports or ride our bike.
So there's an education component to it, to have the kids have a
Absolutely.
Little bit of education.
Part of, Martin has been great at facilitating how we can bring outreach to the community. How can we help the community be involved and get something out of this? So we have these outreach for the classroom. We also have a Healthy Brains for Healthy Oklahoma lecture series, which is free. It's open to the public. It's geared at parents, teachers, and community. So these are not scientific talks where you have to have a PhD to understand them, but they're really geared to give you some information about brain and brain health. There's a lot. It's a 45-minute talk the 4th Thursday of every month. And then we leave an hour for questions. So anyone in the audience can talk to the speaker, ask questions about, you know, things that they've heard in the news and how does that rely. We've done ones on nutrition and sleep. Martin did a great one, actually in response to questions we had gotten at previous lectures about how things like alcohol or meditation or, you know, the Tzatziki virus, how does that affect the brain and based on what we know now in science. But we have these outreach programs so that the community can really see that fiber's there and what we can offer you is a community.
Now, you're looking for these 8, 9, and 10-year-old kids. What sort of time commitment is there for the family and for the kids, too? Because I think when they say scientific research, now one of the great things, I would say, well, I see they're taking biosamples. That means blood. It doesn't mean blood. You guys are going to use saliva.
That's right. So the study is geared towards kids. So we asked the kids to spit in some tubes. So far, the kids think it's pretty awesome. We've had some spit races, a couple of kids in the lab together racing to see who can fill their tube first. And a lot of the testing is, we make it a lot of fun. There's games that we play that we can get different cognitive assessments from. It is a little bit of a lengthy, especially at baseline. The kids are young, so I can't collect 6 hours of data having them sit at a desk and just go 6 hours. They're kids. So we have the families either come in for about a 9-hour day or two split days, one that's about 4.5 hours and one that's about 5 hours. And we do it after school. We do it on no school days, but we add in breaks. We have a fun environment. The kids love to come and hang out. They can play games. We take them outside. We have bubbles and chalk paint that they can play. So there's set breaks in between. The kids are there with other kids. So you can sign up with your friend or your sibling and come in together so that when you're not doing the testing, there's some fun components, different neuroscience games, going outside and just kicking a ball around. We feed them lunch and provide meals. The parent portion is about 4 hours. So some parents come in, you know, on their lunch break, do the in-person part, fill out some surveys at home, and then bring them back to us. Some parents will come and just sit, kind of sit during their child's first session and fill it all out while they're there. We give a lot of options. The parents don't have to stay for the full portion. We understand that that's a lot of time. And if they can drop them off and run errands or go to work for a little while, that's really beneficial. So we've worked that into the system. So to make the least amount of burden on the family.
So there's a lot of time at the very beginning of this survey. And then periodically through the next 10 years, there'll be these sort of check-ins, right?
That's right. So every year we'll have an annual appointment. Every other year, there won't be an MRI. So there'll be less time commitment. That year, it'll be about 3 or 4 total hours. So it'll be a short appointment. You can come in after school and kind of get it done. Or, you know, on a weekend, that's fine. It'll be easier. Those longer years, they'll probably be about 6 hours every other year. As the kids get older, we actually reduce the parent portion because the kids are allowed to give us more information. They're able to give us more information. So the parent portion will reduce itself down so that the parents might not even have to come in the later years once the kids can drive themselves. But it is an annual, and then we do every 3-month follow-ups, but they're done over the phone, and when the kids get older, we'll start doing them over the internet so that we don't have to bring them in. There's less burden on the families.
Now, when you do a decade-long survey, given the mobility of most Americans, how are you going to keep track of these folks over the course of a decade where, you know, you might have a family move 3 or 4 times, maybe to 3 or 4 different cities?
We're putting a lot of effort in right now to collecting as much information as we can so we can follow them. So one of the things we ask families is, do you have a Facebook profile? Because even if you change your email address and your cell phone number and your address, chances are that Facebook profile name may not change and we can find you there. We won't become your friends. We're not going to stalk you on Facebook. But we could send you a private message saying, hey, you know, we can't get a hold of you, but it's time to do your follow-up. If you're still interested, are you, you know, willing to still talk to us?
Even if you move halfway across the country, can you set up with a partner clinic?
Thankfully, there's 19 sites spread pretty breathlessly across the country. So the goal is if you did move out of the area, that you could be within a target area of one of the other sites, and we would just transfer your enrollment to that site. And thankfully, the data collection is all electronic, so there's not a whole lot of effort that we have to do. We can just, you know, say this subject is now transferring to you, and they can pull them right up and continue on with their assessment.
And I'm assuming in the Tulsa area, you're looking for a broad socioeconomic mix, geographic distribution. Are you wanting folks that, say, live in Mounds or kind of outside of the urban metro center to participate along with kids here in the city?
And that may be another important aspect of the study to mention. And the reason why we do primary school recruitment is to ensure that we have a broad representation of the Tulsa community in this study. In fact, we are tasked to recruit our cohort to match as closely as possible the sociodemographic characteristics. That includes Native American population. That includes Latino population. That includes privileged and underprivileged populations. So we really want a broad representation in this study, because otherwise the conclusions that we can draw from our results are really limited.
Yeah, and you know, you're talking about, you know, the opportunities kids have in their lives, you know, and someone from a lower socioeconomic situation versus the highest socioeconomic situation. You know, there's a lot of people collecting data in a lot of these fields. It sounds like what this is this is sort of encompassing an awful lot of research that is going on in small groups. For example, the brain's effect on, like, sports injuries, brain injuries, say, a concussion in football, or, you know, repeated, you know, balls hitting head, like in soccer or something like that. So this is incorporating that. So you'll be able to see effects of that. You'll be able to look at all sorts of sociability studies. You'll be able to look at the effect of technology on brain development. What are some of the key areas both of you are looking forward to? Or you're just going to say, well, where's the data going to take us?
Well, so, you know, our site has a couple of interests. And, you know, as you know, there are significant issues with substances in Oklahoma, and you know, whether it's stimulants like methamphetamine or opiates like prescription medication or heroin. Those are big problem areas in the state. And so one of the areas that we're interested in is what puts a child at risk for engaging either in exploratory or repeated use of those kinds of substances, so that we can hopefully prevent this from happening. But we're also interested in what makes a kid resilient. So what are things that, what we call modifiable factors? What are modifiable factors that you as a parent could do to reduce the risk of exposure and subsequent use of these substances? So that's one of the areas. The other area that we are particularly interested in, we've paired up with several sites, is to look at cultural factors that may confer resilience. And what that means is that, you know, certain cultural segments in the country may have beliefs and ideas about how to engage in risky behaviors, whether it's drugs or alcohol, whether it is driving fast, whatever. And we want to look at whether these cultural backgrounds help, whether if the kid identifies him or herself with those cultural background factors, whether those are helpful in not putting the kid at risk in engaging in unhealthy behaviors. So, for example, one of the areas that we're particularly interested in here is the Native American culture and the protective influences that the Native American heritage has on risky behaviors.
Would you also be thinking of things like religion and
Absolutely.
Religious instruction?
Yes. We get information about attending religious services and how engaged the kid and the family is in religious activities, and we're absolutely interested in that as well.
You mentioned MRIs are a big part of this, and I think of MRI, you go into the tube and you lay still. I know that there's also another sort of brain research, which is seeing how the brain reacts to stimuli. Will that also be a part of it as well?
That actually is a huge part of the MRI that we do. So uh-huh. We do, of course, take the pictures. You lay still in this mm-hmm. and we take pictures, and we let the kids watch movies while they take pictures, because if you're a parent, and I am, of the kid in this age range, the best way to get them to lay still is to put a movie on. So, you know, we do some
movies. And that's giving you a particular sort of picture because you're getting a particular stimuli.
Exactly. But that one is kind of just some structural pictures. But mm-hmm. part of the scan are looking at different, what we call neurocognitive assessments, different parts of brain activity. So we have the kids play these brain games in the scanner. So we can see the different parts of their brain and how it engages and for different kids and how it changes as they grow up. While they're actually in the scanner, how is that functional? It's called functional MRI. How is that happening and how is it changing for different kids as they grow up? It's also good because the kids get to play games in the scanner. And if you tell a kid you get to play a video game in the scanner and get a picture of your brain, we do give each of the kids a T-shirt with a picture of their brain our scans. It's a structural picture. And then we overlay one of the functional pictures that just essentially gives it some color. And so they can see the different parts of their brain. And then we give them a T-shirt that this is your brain. So it makes it kind of fun, but we do get a lot of that information from the scans.
I'm going to ask another question that has to do with how technology is changing our brains, and it has to do with verbal person-to-person skills. Is this something that's going to be tested as well, given the amount of screen time that, you know, a lot of these 9 and 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, especially when they get to middle adolescence, spending a lot of time on screens? And just anecdotally, I've seen a lot of kids that would rather send you a text than talk to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there are a couple of components to the studies where we have ideas about what we're going to study at this point. So, you know, I told you about these risk and resilience factors. But in addition to that, what the consortium has done is really put together several work groups that focus on important areas of concern and of interest. And, you know, the technology use is a huge one. And the kinds of questions that one can ask are really unprecedented. If you think about it, you know, you have a 9 to 10-year-old, you follow that kid over the next five years, and you see how much more the child engages in texting and playing video games. And now you have not just 100, but you have 10,000 of those kids. Then you can study, well, so how does that now affect brain development? Are there particular parts of the brain that maybe develop better? Are there certain parts of the brain that don't develop as well? We know that, sociability is a big factor. And sociability, meaning how you get along with your peers, is something that's learned. It's something that happens in certain parts of the brain. So we could put, for example, what's the effect of extended engagement in video games or in non-direct social activities on brain development in certain parts of the brain? And does that have a healthy or an unhealthy effect? So does that make the child perform better at school or better at sports? Or does it have potential – is it a risk factor? Does it make the kid more likely – to engage in, say, substance seeking or things of that nature. So these are exactly the kinds of questions that we will be able to address with this longitudinal approach, and then make much more conclusive statements. See, one of the issues is that, of course, there are some interesting results that have come out of a number of different research groups. But one has to keep in mind most of these studies are of an order of magnitude smaller than what ABCD is. You know, there may be 50, 100 kids with brain imaging. Now we're talking about a whole different level of research.
So it could confirm or refute some of these
exactly
notions.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's sort of – so if you ask why would you want to spend so much money on a study of this nature, I think the basic goal for ABCD is to provide evidence base to help teachers, to help politicians, to help researchers, to help parents make rational decisions in the future that are not based on – or we think this is how it works, but really having a knowledge base that we know this is how it works. And one has to understand that in science, in order to have conclusive evidence for something, you really need big samples. You need a lot of numbers. And particularly when it comes to individual differences, because we all as parents want to think that our kids are special, and they are special in certain ways. But when you then want to extrapolate from scientific results onto your kid, you need to be careful with small studies because, again, this is just a small sample. But with ABCD, we will be able to say, okay, so what's happened to the kids that are, say, spending most of their time hanging out with friends on the internet versus those kids who go out and, play football, play baseball, play other sports. So we can make these distinctions that we couldn't with smaller studies.
Now, I know the Laureate Institute has been working with University of Tulsa athletes, for example, looking at the effect of sports on brain injuries and brain traumas over the course of their college age. Mm-hmm. Is this something that you can sort of fold into, or will this add an additional piece of knowledge for younger students?
Yes, we had one of our investigators who was very interested in head trauma and had done really a landmark study with TU, looking at changes in the brain as a consequence of repeated head trauma. What he was able to identify was a particular part of the brain that seemed to be very sensitive to that effect, which is called the hippocampus. And what we can do with ABCD is, again, the big issue with the study that we did at LIBOR before was it was called a cross-sectional study. It was basically a one-shot deal. We don't really have a good understanding, you know, does this area heal? Does this area, was this area something that particularly affected in those individuals who had problems to begin with? But in this study, because it's a longitudinal study, we can actually look at, okay, how did the hippocampus look before the kid ever started playing football? And then how does the hippocampus look after playing football and after being exposed to some injuries? And then some of the kids will stop playing football. You know, how does the hippocampus look once the kid stopped? And that will give us a much better picture of the relationship between, say, sports injury and brain development.
Well, Florence, you're sort of the study coordinator and the one in charge of recruitment. If people are hearing this and saying, you know, well, I think we'd like Johnny or Susie to be a part of this, is the best way to contact your school, because it sounds like schools are your primary outreach for participants in the study?
Schools are our primary outreach. So, but there's a lot of schools on our list, and there's a small group of me, and we're also running subjects. So we're not getting to all the schools. If you have questions you want to know about the study, by all means, you can contact us at the Laureate Institute for Brain Research. We have a super easy phone number. It's 918-502-ABCD.
All right. Well, Martin and Florence, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Martin Paulus is the Laureate Institute for Brain Research Scientific Director and President. Florence Breslin is the Study Coordinator for the Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study. You can learn more at laureateinstitute.org/ABCD. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.